Okay, we're beginning here by the two dots on the top of Samachay Omid Aleph. Gemara here is finishing off with the birds, which is that the Torah never specifies the simanim of the ofot, but the Chachamim helped us by giving us the identity of simanim that help us determine whether a bird is kasher or not kasher. This braita was quoted earlier because it's the pivotal braita in determining the sheet of Rashi versus the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rav Moshe Bar Yosef. Their shito derived from this braita. How you interpret this braita will then influence how you view the simanim, which is Tanya. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Dores Vochel Bedua Shutamei. If the bird is Dores and then eats, whatever the definitions of Dores are, we saw numerous definitions of what Dores was, we know for sure it is Tamei. Yeshlo Etzpa Yitera Bezefek Bekurgubano Niklaf Bedua Shutahor. If it has an extra finger, and it has a crop, and it has a gizzard that peels away, then you know for sure that it is tohor. So Rashi makes one comment, which is pivotal. In the third line in Rashi, it says, Varesha Samich. The statement in the latter part of the Braita is connected to the beginning of the Braita, meaning that Kol Of Dores is Tamei, period. If it's Dores, it's Tamei. Eino Dores, then V'yeshlo Od Shlosha Simanim, Tavlo Arba'ah, V'yadua Shehu Tohor. He says that Dores is the super siman, which means that if you're Dores, you're out, period. If you're Eino Dores, that's not enough. You need Eino Dores plus the additional three simanim. For Rashi, there are four simanim, Fanov Tahor. Eino Dores plus the other three simanim. The Rabbeinu Tam, the Rav Moshe Bayosef, we saw back in the sugya of the Ofot and the Simanei Ofot, both said that the three simanim are an indication of whether it is or isn't Dores. That means that the real siman in the instance is Dores and Eino Dores. But if you want to know about Eino Dores, if you have the other three simanim, by definition, you're Eino Dores. There aren't four simanim then. There are really only three simanim. The three simanim determine whether you are Dores or Eino Dores. Because if you're Dores, of course, like Rashi, you're problematic. If you're Eino Dores, then the other simanim will help us know that you are Eino Dores. If you have the other three simanim, by definition, you're Eino Dores. Therefore, for them, there are only really three simanim. Because if you have those three simanim, by definition, you have the fourth siman, which is Eino Dores. And that's why the Balei Tosafot, back earlier in the Gemara, said when we spoke about birds with three simanim, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, one of those simanim had to be Eino Dores. Because if you had the other three, then you would have four. You could only have three simanim if it was Eino Dores plus two other simanim. But if you had the other three simanim, then for sure you ain't with the race, and you automatically had four. For Rashi, you don't have that issue. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Tzadok Omer, Motchin lo chut shel meshicha, you pull a string, im cholek et raglav, shtayim lekan, v'shtayim lekan, tamei. If it splits its fingers, the four fingers that the bird has, two in front, two in the back, then for sure it is tamei. Shalosh lekan, v'achat lekan, if it has three in the forward position and one behind, then it is tahor. Again, here, this is not definitive in nature. It's just the negative is definitive. If it splits its fingers, two in front, two in the back, then for sure it is tamei. If it has three in front, one in the back, then it's possibly tahor. It's not automatically tahor because we know of plenty of birds that do three in front, one in the back, and still are not birds that are kshirim. But there are a number of birds that do two in the front, two in the back that are not kshirim that do that, including the parrot and the Syrian woodpecker that have the two in front and two in the back when they sit on a log or sit on a string. Shem Elazar Omer, Kol Of Kuleit Min Avir Tamei. Any bird that kicks its prey out of the air is Tamei. So again, it's a negative sign, which is that if they catch their prey in the air, by definition, they are Tamei. Doesn't mean vice versa. If they don't catch their prey out of the air, it doesn't mean they are Tahor. But it is definitive that they are tamei. Now that could come one of two ways. There could be birds that eat insects and other things out of the air as they're flying, like swifts and swallows. Or it could be bigger birds that eat other birds or other prey out of the air. They catch them or they attack them in the air itself, like the falcon. The problem is tziparta, which is likely the hummingbird. Nami miklat kalto. It also grabs things out of the air, likely small things like insects and other things like that, which it catches while it's flying. So Amar Abaye, kolet v'ochel kamrinan. It means that not only does it catch it out of the air, but it eats it while it's in flight or while it's in the air. So to be a siman tuma, you have to catch the prey in the air and then eat it when you're on the go. On the other hand, the hummingbird, after it catches it in the air, lands and then eats once it has landed. So therefore, it's not a disqualification because they knew that the tzibarta was a kosher bird. Seemingly, they had a story about that. And so then they're bothered by the fact that it has this siman, which supposedly would automatically make it tameh. And so Abaye makes a distinction which helps to alleviate that concern. Just in a general note, Abaye is mofia in this Gemara very large number of times with regards to the identity of birds and with regards to the simanim of the birds in general. Abaye is quoted very frequently within the sugya. I don't know if he was an expert in the matter or he was the one who was doing the translation, which is that we have simanim or identities of birds that come from the Hebrew, and he's trying to translate them into Aramaic to give a sense of what we're speaking about when you're in Bavel, trying to understand what was said in Eretz Yisrael. Achaim omrim, shachein im tmeim, tamei. If it lives with the tmeim, then it is tamei. Im torim, if it lives with the torim, then it is tahor. Kiman, who is that like? That's not a siman that we've heard of before. That's Kirabi Eliezer. We did have one opinion, if you remember, with regards to the Orev, let me know, that there were birds that were similar to the Orev that were disqualified. And there, Rabbi Eliezer said that the birds that were included were birds that people were eating in Yehuda, people were eating in the Galil. And he said about them, Atidim Nitanet Adin. They're going to pay a price for eating these non-kosher birds. So here's that braita that we quoted before back on Samach Bet Amud Aleph. The Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Lo Bechinam Halach Zarzir Etzel Orev. It's not for naught that the Zarzir, the starling, hangs out with the Orev. Ela Mipnei Shehu Mino. It's because they are of the same species, they hang out together, and that's why he believes the starling is like the Orev, and it is not a kosher bird, it's a Tamei bird. Afilu Teimer Rabbonon. The Rabbonon clearly disagree with Rabbi Eliezer and believe that the starling is not problematic. The question is, what do they disagree about? Do they disagree fundamentally with Rabbi Eliezer's assessment that when you live together, that's not an indication of a problem? Or do they have another threshold that you need in order to guarantee that it is tameh? And that's what the Gemara says here. Afilu teim rabbanan, shachein v'nidmeh kamrinan. It's not enough that they live together. You also need nidmeh. Rashi over here translates nidmeh. We noted this back on Samach Bet Amud Aleph when we spoke about it, as domeh lehem b'marito. It has to have the same appearance as the birds that it's living amongst. It's not just that they set up in the same neighborhood and they hang out in the same places, but they have to look like each other, which makes it a higher likelihood that they are of the same species, the same min. And for that reason, you would then say that the bird is the same bird, the same species, or is problematic. So Rabbi Eliezer, you only have one qualification, which is, does it live together or doesn't live together? Over here, the Zarzir lives with the Orev. It has a designation like the Orev, and it's problematic. The Rabbanon, it might be that it lives together with it, but according to Rashi, it doesn't look like it. According to most of the other Rishonim, it doesn't have the same Simanei Tumah. If you remember back on Samach Bet Amud Aleph, the Orev has two Simanei Tumah. We had much discussion amongst the Rishonim, three different opinions as to what those Simanim were. The one in common between all of them was Etzba Yeteira, that the Orev has. And then the question with regards to the Zerzir, because back on Samach Bet Amud Aleph, one of the Tchunot of the Zerzir was Ibn Sheishlo Zefek, because it has a crop, and there the Rishonim seem to indicate that that was something that the Orev did not have. And so therefore the difference between them is that they don't show the same Simanei Tumah. And so the Chachamim only say that living together is a Siman Tumah when you also demonstrate or you display the same Simanei Tumah. Whatever the Simanei Tumah of the Orev have to be the same Simanei Tumah of the Zarzir, and that was not the case. And that's why they think it is Tahor. Now we're moving on to the Chagavim. If you remember in the Mishnah, it gave us four simanim for the Chagav. Kosheleisho arba raglaim. It has four legs. Va'arba kinafayim, four wings. Vikartzulim, and as I call them back there, jumpers, which are another set of legs that are higher up that allow it to jump, allow it to move. Uknafav chufim et rubo. And its wings cover the majority of its body. So there again, you have four wings, meaning it has two sets of wings. It's one set of wings that are cover wings and one set of wings that are more along the flying wings. But they have two sets of wings that also cover the grove of the body of the Chagav. And then Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi adds on, Ushmo Chagav, that it has to also have the name Chagav. It's not enough that it displays the Simanim, it also has to have the name Chagav associated with it. Tosafot over here, really speaking about the Mishnah, goes on to say that Rabbi Yossi is not arguing with the Tanakama, but rather he's adding on to the Tanakama. The reason being that today we're going to see two Braitot, and the Braitot argue about what are the Simanim for the Chagavim, and the Braita of Rabbi Shmuel, which matches up with the Simanim in our Mishnah, he's the one who mentions Chagav as well. And so the one who mentions the four Simanim that are in our Mishnah also mentions Ushmo Chagav. So if that's the case, then Rabbi Yossi, who says Ushmo Chagav in the Mishnah, is not coming to argue on the Tanakama, but rather to be additive. And the Tanakama agrees with that, that these are the oldest Simanim that you need, the four physical Simanim, and the last one, which is its name, fits the description that the Torah says, which is Chagavim. Your question is a fair question, and it happens to be a machloket rishonim in understanding the Gemara, which is that Chagav has two possible meanings. The word Chagav is a generic name for the whole species, and Chagav is a particular name of a specific type of Chagav. So when Rabbi Yossi requires that it name be Chagav, rishonim argue about whether he means that all of them have to have the name Chagav, which means not that their particular name is Chagav, but they're in the family of Chagav. Or when Rabbi Yossi says that name has to be Chagav, the Rambam suggests that means that the one that's called Chagav has the name Chagav. The other three don't have to have the name Chagav. It's unique to that one category called the Chagav. So it is Machloket Rishonim as to how broad that statement of Rabbi Yossi is. Does Chagav mean all of them have to be subsumed under this Chagav category? Or is it just the Chagav has that particular requirement beyond the other three, which is that it has to be called a Chagav? So now, in the Torah, you have the psukim, which are going to be important in defining what these items are. It says, Etzeh tochlu mikol sheretz ha'of. These are sheretz ha'of, meaning these are flying shretzim. Ha'olei chal arba. They go on four. So there's one of your requirements. Asher lo kra'ayim mima'al raglav l'natar b'hinat aretz, that has these jumpers that allow it to move around and to jump around and to look around to investigate the land. So those are the requirements that we saw in the Mishnah, two out of the four requirements. One is four legs, and the other one is two jumpers. Et ele mehem tochelu. These are the ones that you're allowed to eat. Et arbe limino, veta salam liminehu, veta chargol liminehu, Betachagav leminehu. So there are four names that are mentioned here, which are the Arbes, Salam, Chagol, and Chagav. Those are the four different species that are mentioned, and each one of them has either lemino, leminehu, that follows it. So we'll have to discuss what each of those mean. And then it ends, V'chusher tzof, Ashelo arba raglaim, sheketzu lachem. Anything that just has those four legs and is missing the remaining identifying factors for being a kosher Chagav, those are tamei, and you may not eat them. So now, the Gemara asks the question, my rubo. What does it mean that the wings have to cover the robe of the body? So, amrei yudah marav, robe or coat. The simple way to understand it would be the length of the locust that we're speaking about here. So the length of the locust, the wings would have to extend over the robe of the length of the locust. V'amri la, some suggest, robe hekefo, the circumference of the locust. And not only does it have to cover the length of the locust, it has to cover the majority of the body of the locust. So over the top and around the sides, only leaving the underneath really exposed. And so the majority of the body is encompassed by the wings, not just the length of the wings. All right. Amar Papa, Hilkach. But Papa comes to the conclusion, therefore, being in rov or ko, or being in rov hekefo. In order for it to be a kosher chagav, you're going to have to meet both requirements, which is it's going to have to be the majority of the length of the body, as well as the majority of the circumference of the body. You'll need both of these qualifications in order for it to be deemed a kosher chagav. Just going to take a slight digression here about Rav Papa. Rav Papa does this numerous times in Shas, which is that we'll have different opinions, and then Rav Papa will come along and say, Hilkach. Therefore, we subscribe to both opinions, which actually this is the second time we've had it here in Chulin. If you remember back by the Mara, by the gallbladder, if there was a piece of the gallbladder left, then we said the animal was kasher. There was a qualification about it being a kazayit, and the kazayit, where was it? So there was a machloket amoraim as to whether kazayit was makom mara. Was it in the location of the liver, in the base of where it starts out, Or is it b'makom shechayo? It is in the place where it gives life, quote unquote, to it. We saw that the difference of whether that means on the side with the liver or on the opposite side is the mara. And then Rav Papa comes along and says, Hilkach b'inin kazayit b'makom mara, kazayit shehi chayo. You need both of those requirements. And similarly over here, you have two positions within the Amoraim as to what Rubo is. And Rav Papa comes along and says, Hilkach, we're going to do both of those. We're going to have that coming up again in Chulin. There's going to be a third time in Chulin where Rav Papa does the same thing in Daf Ayin Vav. And then if you look in Masechet Brachot, there's actually three times that Rav Papa does that in Brachot. One time that he does it in Masechet Tanit, one in Masechet Shabbat, and one in Masechet Megillah. Some of them you will be familiar with. For instance, coming up for Purim, that the Bracha after the Megillah, so the way to close the Bracha was a Machoket, whether it's a Nifrim Yisrael Mikotzareihem or Hakela Moshiach. So he combines both of them, and the Bracha that we make is a Nifrim Yisrael Mikotzareihem Hakela Moshiach. We put the Bracha together. Or the bracha for the rainbow. Again, Amoraim argue about and each give a lashon. He combines the lashon and says, Zuchar abrit, b'neman b'rito, b'kayam b'mamaro. So it's a longer bracha that combines both languages. Or by the end of the bracha of Sher Yatzar. Again, is Rofei Kol Basar, Umafli Lasot. Again, it's a combination of two opinions. One saying Rofei Kol Basar, one saying Umafli Lasot. He puts them together. So what's interesting is that there are actually nine times that Rav Papa does this in Shas. And I heard from David Rosenbaum's father, we know that when you have a siyum on a Masechet in Gemara, at the end you mention all the children of Rav Papa. Question is, why were Rav Papa's children so special that they're mentioned in the siyum of Gemara? So many suggest because Rav Papa, who was a Talmid Chacham, had many children that were also Tamidei Chachamim along with him. But if you actually count the number of children that are mentioned there, it says Chanina Bar Papa, Rami Bar Papa, Nachman Bar Papa, Chai Bar Papa, Abba Mari Bar Papa, Raphram Bar Papa, Rochich Bar Papa, Surchav Bar Papa, Adar Bar Papa, and Daru Bar Papa, which is 10 children of Bar Papa that are Tamidei Chachamim. And so he told me over that the reason that is because Bar Papa 10 times in Shas brings a compromised position. And since he compromises in order to deal with the machloket, so he was rewarded with 10 sons that were Tamidei Chachamim for those 10 positions in Shas where he's a compromised position. And therefore we mentioned the children of Rav Papa as a certain amount of idealism that we should look to reach compromises and look to ways to bridge the differences rather than create machloket. The only problem is that I quoted you before that there are only 9 times that it says Hilkach Namrin and Letavayu, that will do both of them. There is one instance, which is in Brachot, on Daf Yud Aleph. On Daf Belav, it says, Bracha Birkat HaTorah, gives different versions of Birkat HaTorah, and the Gemara just ends, Hilkach Limrinu Lekulu. Therefore, we're going to say all the different Birkat HaTorah. There's no attribution over there. But if you look in the Rukive Eger, over there on the side, he says, Birif Uberosh Hagirsa Amara Papa. That the girsa there was Amar Rav Papa, Yukach, Leminu, the Kuhu, and that gives you the 10th instance where Rav Papa is a compromised position. So this is Rav Papa, Lashitato. It's the genre of Rav Papa's style to bring them together. And again, it's a nice idea that the 10 times that it's mentioned in Shas, where he does such a thing, he's then rewarded with 10 children who are Tamidei Chachamim that we mention anytime we finish a Masechta to hold that up as a type of ideal, or a position of someone who sought to bridge differences. Tan Rabbanan. So now we have a limud. Ein lo akshav, if the locusts do not have these wings that cover their entire body right now, vatit legadel, lachazman, but they will grow them in the future, kagon, and then it gives you an example, hazachal, which is some species of locust that does this, mutar, then they are able to be eaten. Belazar Rabbi Yossi Omer, the source for that is Asher Lo Kura'ayim. Even though it doesn't have jumpers, Afa Pishein Lo Akshav, even though it doesn't have them now, Vatit LeGadel LaAchar Zman. But it will grow them after time. And then, Mai Zachal, what is the Zachal? Amar Abaye Iskaren. So again, Abaye appearing here, translating the word for us. Not that necessarily helps us. There's the Zachal. And then there's the Iskaren, which both of which are not easily identified. Ella, you have to do it the other way around, which is to figure out which species of locusts grow their legs later on, that they're not born with those jumpers, but grow them later on, and people try to identify the locusts based on that. The drusha comes from the kri and the ktiv in the pasuk. The pasuk says, asher lo kra'ayim. The ktiv is lamed aleph. Asher lo kra'ayim does not have jumpers. The kri, the way that we read it, is lo with a vav, which means it does have kra'ayim. It's similar to the drusha by the batei aroi choma, where it says, asher lo choma. Also there, there's a lamed aleph and a lamed vav. And so there, the chazal dashin similarly. Asher lo choma, even though it doesn't have a wall around it now, the city, but lo choma, it did have a wall at some point in time, that's still considered to be a walled city. I mean, as long as it was walled at the time of Yeshua ben Nun, which is the cut up. But that is the same type of drusha of a Korean tiv with lo. And similarly over here, asher lo kra'ayim, you can see Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi quotes it as asher lo with the lamed aleph. That's the ktiv. He's saying that's the drusha. Asher lo kra'ayim, it doesn't have jumpers now, but atzid, in the future, it will have lamed vav. Lo kra'ayim, it will have jumpers. That's okay. You don't have to have them your whole life in order to be a kosher locust. Even if you grow them later on, that would be sufficient in order to deem it to be a kosher locust and to have that siman. The Tosfot does point out that the Gemara makes this drusha sometimes even when there's no Korean ktiv. And Tosfot, similar to other drusha in the Torah, says context matters, which is that in certain contexts, there is a necessity to make the drusha because there's a compelling reason in the pasuk, or there's some information that's pushing you towards such a drusha. And therefore, sometimes even when there's no lamed vav, then they still make this drusha because of the fact that there's something else compelling you to do that. So I read this as saying that the Tana Kama is saying this about the wings of the Chagavim. And then Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi comes to add the fact that this is also true by the legs. And then he brings a source for that. And then once you have a source for that, we'd also back that into the wings itself. Or possibly you only need that by the Katsulayim, by the jumpers, not by the wings, because the wings naturally grow and expand over time. But the Katsulim should have been present originally, and the fact that they weren't, you would have thought might be a disqualification, and that's why you need a limud. Other than Rishonim, like Rashi, clearly learned that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi is saying the same thing as the Tana Kama, based on how he describes the Zachal over here, and therefore they're both speaking about the Katsulim, and all that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi is doing over here is adding the source for the fact that the Tana Kama is giving. But not that he has a differentiated or different opinion than the Tana Kama. They're both saying that if you don't have Katsulayim when it's born, but you have them afterwards, that that's fine. Tara Banan, we're going to move on to a Braita now. This is the first of two Braita that we're going to meet today. Each of the Braita is going to lay out their position somewhat cryptically. Tomorrow's daf, we're going to spend time on what exactly is the methodology for Limud that is being used over here. The two methodologies that the Gemara will indicate that we're using are, first of all, Klalu Prat. Klalu Prat means that you have a generic statement, and then you have details written. A Klalu Prat means, Ein Bachlau Ela Mashe Beprat. It's one of the 13 Midot of Rabbi Yishmael, that if you have a Klalu Prat, when you have a generic statement and a detail, the detail is defining for you, explaining what's in the Klau, and therefore that we have a limited scope in what it includes. On the other hand, if you have a klau, uprat, uklau, that you have a generic statement, a particular statement, then a generic statement, the generic statements come to tell you that anything similar to the prat will be included in whatever is being said here. Now, by klau, uprat, uklau, there are actually two types of klau, uprat, uklau. We spent time on this in Masechet Nazir, and Rashi raises it over here as well, which is that when you look at a klau, uprat, uklau, what do you think is the default? And what do you think is the extra? Do you start out with a klal uprat, and then you have a klal that adds on? Or do you start out with a prat uklal, and then you add on a klal in the front? The difference between them will be, how similar does the item that you're including have to be towards the prat? If you believe that the beginning default state is klal uprat, that it's really a klal with a prat afterwards, which have been very limited in scope, then the latter klal comes along and tells you, don't just limit it to those items, include more than just those items. In that case, you would say that the items that are included have to be very similar to the pratim, because the pratim were limiting the scope of this in the beginning. And now you have a klal that says add on a little more. Add on a little more means things that are very similar. On the other hand, if you believe that it was a prat uchlal, that the original default was that it was a prato klal. A prato klal means including everything. And then the first klal comes and limits the scope of that. When you say it limits the scope, then that klal would only limit it by saying that you have to have something in common with the prat, not that you have to have everything in common with the prat. Rashi notes over here that the klal, prat, klal we're using here is where the klal, comma, is dafka. Is where the first klal is dafka, meaning klal uprat is the base, and then the latter klal is what adds on. And that means that only items that share all the commonalities over here are going to be things that we include in the klal uprat klal. So the first braita begins, Tanur Banan, et ele mehem tochelu. That's the kalal, the generic statement at the beginning of the list of the locusts that are kasher. That's the first statement. Then it makes a statement, et arbeh. The arbeh is now a particular item. Later on, again, we'll learn that this means a kalal uprat. Arbeh ze govai. So again, here we're translating the word from Hebrew into Aramaic. That is the govai. And we're just loosely translating them. Those are the migrating locusts. Or it might also be the desert locust, Salam, which is the next particular one that's mentioned there, Zerishun, which is probably the bald locust, which could be identified with the Troxalis, or the Creta, Chargol, Zenipul, which is the grasshopper, likely, Chagav, Zegidian, or Gidin, depending on the gears that you have in the Aruch, or what we have, and those are likely crickets of sorts. So here, they define which species particularly are being included, and that's it. Then, Matam with Omar. The problem with that is that each one of them then has a riboy that sits after it, which is, Limino, Limineo, 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 Dalit Pamim. What are those ribuyim doing over there? Dalit Pamim, Lahavi, they'll come to include four types that are very similar to the parent type that's mentioned there. One is to include the Tziporet Kramim, which is also maybe known as the Egyptian grasshopper. Again, these are types of locusts that have features that are similar to the parent locust. We're going to get that to in a second, that each one of these locusts are differentiated from each other with certain features. Maybe we're including one item that is similar to it, the parent with the features. So you have Tziporet Kramim that is included, that's very similar to the Arbeh. Then you have Yochanan Yushalmit, which is similar to the Salam. Then you have Arzovia, which is similar to the Chagol. And then you have the Razvanit, which is similar to the Chagav. So now you have, in this drusha, again, I'm giving you a preview about what's going to happen tomorrow, you have a Klal Uprat. The Klal Uprat says only these types are included, nothing else. But then you have these four words that are Ribuim, and that's exactly what he views them as, Ribuim. And your Mirabe, with each one of them, one additional type that is similar to the parent type locus, and that's it. That's the first braita. The Beimar Bishmal Tana. Here is the second braita that we have. Elu, klalei, klalot, velu, pratei, pratot. There are certain super klalim, and there's certain super details over here. The way that Rashi says over here is, hanach lemineu, la prate ninhu. The mino and the mineu are not pratim over here. They are actually klalim, which means that you really actually now create a klal, uprat uklal. What's going to end up happening is that there are certain of these that are necessary, and certain of them that are unnecessary in terms of the klal, uprat uklal. It looks like when you have our four klal, uprat uklals, those klal, uprat uklals that are unnecessary give you additional information, which is klalei, klalot, and pratei, pratot. Although the Ramban suggests that klalei, klalot means klal, uprat uklal, and pratei, pratot means binyanav. And we're going to see that in the Braita, that it has a construction of both klal uprat uklal, as well as a binyanav. And again, all of this will pan out when we explain this. So again, here he translates, arbeh ze govai, limino. Limino comes lavi, tziporet akramim. So that's similar to what we said in the previous Braita, but then it adds on. Ein li ela lava, ve'ein lo gabachat. Habav yesh lo gabachat minayin. One of the features of the arbeh is that it doesn't have a gabachat. Rashi over here translates gabachat as being bald. And that's what we said before. There's the bald locust as a contrast to the locust that is not bald. So one of the features of the arbeh is that it's not bald. In lo gabachat, and Rashi relies on or leans on the parshiot in Vayikra that describe one of the tzarat as being tzarat ha-gabachat, which is again when there's hair missing in the front. So these would be heads of locusts that don't have fuzzy hair on them. They're smooth instead of having fuzzy hair on them. So that'd be one feature that is unique about the arbeh. other view in the Oruch is that the gabachat means a hump, similar to like the camel's hump. So gabachat means it has a hump, whereas inlo gabachat means it doesn't have a hump on it. So the unique feature about the arveh is that it doesn't have a gabachat. It also happens not to have other features, which we're going to discuss in a second, which are inlo zanav. It does not have a tail, or it doesn't have an extension in the back. Vein rosho aroch, and it doesn't have a long head. So these are a number of features that are associated with these locusts that we're discussing here. The arveh has none of these features. It is not gabachat, which means it doesn't have the hump or it's not bald. Ein lo zanav, it doesn't have a long tail to it. Doesn't literally mean it has a tail. Whether that means that certain species of locusts have these extensions which the female uses to lay eggs and actually push them into the ground or into vegetation. Or it means that just the body is longer. It doesn't have that. And then Ein Rosho Aroch means it has a stubby type of head, not an extended type of head. So now that's what the Gemara says. From this first, quote-unquote, Klalu Pratu Klal, I only would have included things that are similar to the Arveh. And again, if you remember, Rashi said that we're using a very tight definition of what is included over here, because these are Klal Rishon Dafka. The first Klal is Dafka, which means that it has to be exactly alike in order for us to include it. So now, in order to be something that's similar to the Arveh, you would have to be Ein lo gabachat, Ein lo zanav, Ein lo shor aroch. You'd have to have all those features. So that's what the Gemara says here. Ein lo aba, Ein lo gabachat. From the Arveh, we've only included items that don't have a gabachat. Aba, v'yesh lo gabachat binayin. What happens to species that do have a gabachat? How do I know they're also possibly kosher species? Tamalomar, salam, ze, nipul. That's the salam, which we define as nipul. That is different than the previous breita. The previous breita called it Rishon. It reversed the Aramaic translations, and the Gemara will address that in tomorrow's daf to explain that they just called them by different names in their different locations. Salam has this feature, which is yesh lo gabachat. It does have a gabachat, but ein lo zanav ve'ein lo shor aroch. It doesn't have the other two features. I mean, it's similar to the arveh in the fact that it doesn't have a zanav, doesn't have a long neck, but it's differentiated in that it does have gabachat. Either it's bald or it has a hump, unlike the arveh. Liminehu, that's mentioned afterwards, lavieta ushkaf. That comes to include the ushkaf. Rashi over here says that not only does it include the ushkaf, it also includes the Yochanan HaYerushalmi that was included by the other Braita, is also included over here through the minehu, because they share that common feature with the salam, that they all have a gabachat, but they don't have a zanav and they don't have a long neck. Vein le laba, vein lo gabachat. Now I only have species that don't have a gabachat, habavi yesh lo gabachat, or species that do have a gabachat, right? The arveh that doesn't, and the salam that does. Habav vein lo zanav. And again, I have all these things that do not have a tail to them, because neither of them have a tail. Habavi yesh lo zanav minayin. How do I know something that does have a tail is also possibly included? Tamalomar chagol. That's the third species over here, because the chagol has a gabachat, and it has a zanav, but ein rosho aroch. It does not have a long neck to it. Zerishun, again, it's just the opposite of what we did before. Liminehu, liminehu lavi eta karsefet veta shachalanit, comes to include these two as well. Rashi again over here says, v'hu adin artsuvia, similar to the artsuvia, also the artsuvia that we mentioned before, is also included over here. So Rashi just says this breita is naming the incremental ones that it includes, not just the ones that were mentioned in the previous breita. But then he makes another comment. He says, V'inami. It's possible, that these are overlaps. And the name of the locust in their location was different than the name in the other location. Which is that, for instance, in the previous case where we included the Uchkaf, and in the previous breita they included the Yochana Yushalmit, maybe they're the same species. Just one had that name for it and the other one had a different name for it. The Rashi speculates that maybe that's why he doesn't mention the ones mentioned in the previous Braita, or possibly he's just mentioning the incremental ones and he would have included the ones in the other Braita as well. So now we have the Chargol that includes things that have a Zanav to it. Vainly, Ela Ba, Vainlo Gabachat. So now I only have a case where I have something that doesn't have a Gabachat. Habab Yeshlo Gabachat, or something that does have a Gabachat, which is included through Salam. Habab Vainlo Zanav, things that don't have tails, like the arveh and the salam. Habavi yesh lo zanav, or things that do have a tail, like the chargol. If it comes and it doesn't have a long neck, we already include it, because all of the species that we mentioned so far don't have long necks to them. What about a species that does have a long neck to it, or a long head to it? Are we able to include those? Where are those included from? And seemingly, the continuation of the braita would be that chagav, that has a long head, should have solved that problem. The fact that it doesn't go that way, and then retreats and does something else with chagav, tells you there must be some sort of transition in the limud, and the question is, what happened, or what was that transition over here? Amart, hareyata dan v'binyanav mishloshtan. We can make a binyanav from the three that we have mentioned so far. Lo re'i arbe k're'i chagol. The arbe is not like the chagol. The lo re'i chagol k're'i arbe. And the chagol is also not like the arbe. Even though the arbe and chagol were the furthest apart, that's exactly why the Gemara is contrasting them, because they have the least overlap in features. They have only one feature that overlaps. And so the arbe is not the chagol, and the chagol is not the arbe. Usually it means the characteristics. Over here, you can actually look at it literally. Lo re'i, the appearance of this is not similar to the appearance of something else. The Gemara uses it even in a more esoteric manner, which is that when it's trying to compare one feature to another feature, or one type of nezek to another type of nezek, it says this nezek has features that don't appear in the other nezek, and appear doesn't mean literally appear, it means these are features that are existing in that type of nezek. Over here, it can literally mean the appearance, because they literally look this way. They have these features. So it means that the arbe does not look like the chagol. The chagol doesn't look like the arbe. V'lo shrei shnehem. And the, both of them, kerei salam, don't look like the salam. V'lo rei salam kerei shnehem. And the salam doesn't look like those two. Hatzada sheshaveh shebehen. What is the common denominator between all these three species? Sheish lo dalei raglayim. They have four legs. V'arba kanafayim, four wings. V'kar tzulim, and they have jumpers. Uchnafav chofim et lubo, and its wings cover the majority of its body. So therefore, af kol sheyesh lo arba raglayim v'arba knafayim, anything that displays these characteristics of four legs, four wings, v'kar tzulim and jumpers, uchnafav chofim et lubo, and its wings cover the majority of the body, then it should be a kosher locust. Meaning that through these three, we've now come into what's the common denominator between these three items. And that common denominator now will allow us to include anything that's similar to them with the four simanim. The four simanim that we saw in our Mishnah, those are the four simanim required to include something. So Gemara challenges that and says, V'alo hatzir tzur. So hatzir tzur is something that was known by the Gemara to be a tamei locust. V'alo hatzir tzur hazeh yesh lo arba raglayim v'dal kanafayim. It has all the features that should make it kosher. It has four legs, four wings, v'katzulim, and jumpers, u'chanafav, chofim, and rubo. Yochayeh mutar. You would think it'd be mutar, but they know it's not mutar. So then, how do we exclude it if it has all the features that you just enumerated from those three locusts? Tamalomar chagav. That's the four species that's mentioned there. Chagav, shishmo chagav. That has a name called a chagav. So if it has the name chagav, then it can be incorporated in the kosher locust. It doesn't have the name chagav, it can't be. Again, here comes up what you asked before. Some rishonim say means any of them need the generic name to be chagav. Others say it's only about the particular species of chagav. They have to have the name chagav. And sirtzur is a subset of chagav. Ishmo chagav, yocholim bo ko simanim alalo. So you think, okay, if it has the name chagav, that's enough. You don't even need the simanim. It's either or. Either you have the simanim or chagav. Tamalomar limineyu, aji bo ko la simanim alalo. Until you have all of these simanim. So therefore, the chagav limineyu teaches you both it has to have the name chagav and it has to have all of the simanim. This is the latter braita that we brought. This is the limud that comes from that braita as opposed to the first braita. So now, parich Rav Achai. Rav Achai asks a very simple question, which is basically what the Gemara was asking in the end, which is, malahanach shekein ein rosh hamaruch. You have a common denominator, a common fifth feature between all of these locusts, which is none of them have a long head. So you had different features like gabachat and zanav that appeared in all of them, but the one that you didn't address was there was a third feature which none of them have, which is ein rosh arukh. If that's the case, then if you would bring the common denominator between them through a binyanav, you'd have to say ein rosh arukh is one of those qualifications that is necessary. If you say just because they have four in common, therefore we say, oh, just look at those four and we'd include things. We don't ask questions. What about the chargol? Why do you have to write the chargol at all? It also has those four features, and you can get those four features from the Arbe and the Salam. If you take the Arbe and Salam and compare them, they also have these four features in common, and then you could have included the chargol without having the Torah write it. They don't have in common the gabachat and yesh lo gabachat, but everything else they have in common. So then you'd have a problem. Elo, ikal mifrach. The undermining principle over there is, malanach shkein le'enam zanav. Both the Arbe and the Salam don't have these tails to them. That's a common denominator would make a fifth requirement of Ein Lo Zanav. So therefore we added in Chargol, which does have a Zanav, to tell you that that's not a feature that matters. Because the Chargol has it, the other two don't have it, that shows you it's not a feature that matters. But Hachanami, over here, all three of them have this feature in common, which is the Ika Lamifrach, Malhanach Shekein Ein Lo Shamaroch. You could ask, why isn't that one of the five features now? You had four features, there should be a fifth feature, which is Ein Lo Shamaroch, which is a commonality between the first three that are mentioned there, which is the Arbe, the Salam, and the Chargol. And so Rashi says over here, the question of Echi Teima is a question, maybe they learned that the Klala Batra is Dapko, and therefore you don't need as much commonality between them. You could just get some highlight features, and that would be enough to include all the items. You wouldn't need everything to be overlapping. Again, there's a higher standard if the Klala Kama is Dapka, like we described when we began discussing the Braitot over here. So the Gemara's Havamin over here is, let's maybe say that the Klala Batra is Dapka, and therefore you have more room to include items, and Rosh HaAroch isn't so important. Now, the Tosafot then says, out of the features that are there, why would you have picked those features and excluded other features? And therefore he says, Fiza Nitzrech Lomar, De'en Lo Zanav, Ein Rosh HaAroch, Ein Stadim Gruim. The fact that it doesn't have a tail and that its head is not long, those are kind of minor features. Yoter miotan shanu matzrichim babraita b'tzad hashaveh, compared to the other ones that we do require, which are four simanim that we mentioned in the tzad hashaveh. So therefore, if we said that the klala batra was dafka, then we would have dropped those requirements. But then Rav Chai shows that that can't be possible, because if you thought that it was klala batra dafka, then you don't need chargol. You could have learned that from Arbe V'Salam, because you don't need everything to match up then, and we would leave out all these types of ancillary character traits and only have the primary four. But the fact that the Breita doesn't do that shows you that it really believes that Klala Lakama is Dafka. If that's the case, then how from the first three are you able then to include Chagav, because Klala Lakama is Dafka, and that would have included everything, including the ancillary item, which is Rosho Eino Aroch. And then Chagav would have been left out. So therefore, it must be that the Breita switched its mechanism at that point and then used the Binyan Av. That's the way Rashi explains the question of Rav Chai, as well as the dealing with what the Breita says versus what Rav Chai's question is. And then the Ramban says it's a question about Binyan Av. We're not dealing with a Klal Pratu Klal. Rather, it's how do you build a Binyan Av? And that's the question that's being noted by Rav Chai over here, which is the Breita seems to indicate a certain manner for building the Binyan Av, and then if you continue with that type of limud, you would end up then excluding something that is Rosho Aroch. So, Ela Amar Rav Chai, Salam Yuteruhu. The reason is because Salam was unnecessary. Lo Lichtov Rachman HaSalam. Don't write this species Salam, but Teite Mi Arbe Umei Chargol. And you could have learned it out from a commonality between Arbe and Chargol. Arbe and Chagol have nothing in common between them. The Arbe does not have a gabachat and does not have a tail. On the other hand, the Chagol has a gabachat and has a tail. What that shows you is neither of those features are meaningful. And therefore, the Salam, which has one of those features, which is Ein Lo Zanav, that is in common with the Arbe, and it has one feature that's in common with the Chagol, Yesh Lo Gabachat, it should also be included, and you don't need anything else to tell you that. You don't need me to tell you Chagol Salam is included, because you would have learned that from the fact that you had Arbe and Salam, which have offsetting features, and tells you these features aren't important. Therefore, the Salam that has one of those features in common with each one of them shouldn't matter, and it should have been included. The Mai Parach, what are you going to say? Mother Arbe Dein Lo Gabachat? The Arbe doesn't have a Gabachat. Hare Chagol De Yesh Lo Gabachat. The Chagol does have it. Mala Chagol De Yesh Lo Zanav. It has a tail. Hare arbe deinlozanav. Salam tichtib rachmana lomeli. Then why did the Torah bother to write the salam? It wasn't necessary. You could have learned it. You told me arbe and chagol, I would have been done. Im einu inyan le gufo, teineu inyan le rosho aroch. Since you don't need it at all, therefore now we're going to use it for something that we do need it for, which is that there is a common denominator between arbe and chagol, which is ein rosho aroch, that they don't have these extended heads. So along comes the salam, which wasn't necessary. So if it's not necessary for the key features that we have between all these, which is gabachan and zanav, then use it for another feature to tell us that that doesn't matter as well. And salam's coming to tell you that ein rosho aroch is not important, and that even if it is rosho aroch, it will also be included. This goes back to what the Tanit Beit Meishmal started from, which was klalei klalot to pratei pratot, which is that there are certain parts of klal prato klal here that are unnecessary. That first one is salam was unnecessary to be written. So what did salam come to teach you? That even if rosho aroch, it still is a kosher locus, and that's not one of the four features that you need in order to be a kosher locus. Even though the salam has a short end, ein u'inyan, because you didn't need it, it's ne'od u'inyan the rosho aroch. And the Riva says, how do you know when you had salam to include rosho aroch and not to include other items, meaning that one of the four, how do you know not to waive one of those requirements and only waive the requirement of rosho ein u'aroch? That goes back to what the Baal Tosafot said before, that it is a trait that is garua. It's not on the same plane as the first four traits. And therefore now, when the salam comes along and says that rosho aroch is included, we don't just say that rosho aroch is enough and you don't need any of the other features, because the other features are much more important than rosho aroch. And therefore when the salam comes to include rosho aroch, it includes rosho aroch plus the original four simanim, because the first four simanim are more important or more significant than the rosho aroch. And for that reason, when salam comes to add in rosho aroch, it's incremental and not exclusive. It's not to say rosho aroch and nothing else and you're okay. It's rosho aroch on top of the other four simanim. Although the Riva does bring another possibility, which is that shein shum min chagav su chaser mihan achar ba'as simanim. There's no chagav that's missing these four traits. And the only traits that are flexible are the things like the rosho aroch, a rosho en aroch. That is possible to find a chagav that's missing that or has that, but it's impossible to find a chagav that's missing these four simanim. Although the Bala Mor says that that's not a viable hamamina, because the pasuk itself already tells you that it's a kol folechal arba, shelo kray mimal raglav nater behen al aretz. The ability of the chagav to move and to explore is essential to its definition. And therefore the arba groglaim and the kratzulim that are there must be something that is essential to the definition of the locus, as well as maybe the wings to move around, because its movement is inherent to its definition. And therefore, you would never have a hamamina to say that the other four simanim are not necessary, because the other four simanim are almost explicit in the Torah, because it defines what a chagav is in the Torah. Then, the chagav is also unnecessary, because the chagav you could have gotten from the other three that are mentioned now. So why do you need the chagav? That's to teach you that chagav shemo, it needs to have the name chagav, and you need the simanim. You need both of those. So the word chagav is extraneous, and the mineu is extraneous. The truth is, by salam, the mineu is also extraneous. And then the rivam on the previous amud says that the mineu, the salam, first rivam, the itzrich, you need that. Diloktiv the mineu, havamina davka b'min salam shari, that only by salam is rosho aroch allowed, ava b'shar lo, but other species would not be so. There writes mineu to extend it, the reboye kulu, in order to include all of them. Inami, that the havamina that salam atales sormino, it's coming to say that that type is actually problematic. Kamash malan, that that's not the case. Lemineu tells you that it's an inclusive term rather than an exclusive term. So for one of those reasons, the Rivam suggests that you need the mineu by the salam in order to expand the view of what salam takes care of over here. Well, the Ramban just simply says that mineu is unnecessary. It's just written to keep parallel structure in the psukim according to this view. But those are the klalei klalot and pratei pratot, as Rashi mentioned, that Tana de Bereish Mel is invoking in order to learn what are the four features that are important over here. And that is through a klal prato klal. Each one of them is a klal prato klal, but the salam and the chagav have a klal prato klal, which are unnecessary. And therefore, they're going to come to teach us additional new information by the Salam, that even Rosh HaAruch can be a kosher locus, meaning that's not one of the features that matters. And Chal Gav, to teach you that name also matters. And so then, tomorrow we're going to continue with B'mai Kamiflagay. These two brightot, what exactly is the fundamental machloket between these two brightot? I'm going to stop here at the bottom of Samachayom with Bet.